Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hi there, I'm Greg from Kapow. Visit us at kapow.com to check out our unique collection of everyday reusable products designed to help you do more with less. C-U-P-P-O-W.com.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Fun Men About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Talk right on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome to episode 171.
Onomatopoeia.
So we are actually at the Westchester Homebrewers Organization meeting tonight, where I am speaking about shortcut sours. So we checked in with some of our previous guests that are here in New York City to find out where are they now and what are they doing.
Enjoy.
I'm here at Proof and Gauge in Long Island City with Chris Murillo. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing great. Great to see you, Mary.
Good to see you, too. So the last time that we had you on the show was episode 105, which is about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And this is before you actually had a location.
That's right.
The location that I'm sitting in now. So tell us your journey to this place. So first of all, what is Proof and Gauge?
So Proof and Gauge is the tasting room at the Astoria Distilling Company. It's a full bar, but we've chosen to only feature New York beer, New York wine, and of course, New York spirits, including Queen's Courage, which is the spirit that we make. We also feature spirits from Van Brunt Stillhouse and a few other friends we've made along the way in the distilling community.
Awesome. And then your actual distilling space is also...
It's right behind the wall, right here. So we're sitting in Proof and Gauge, and right behind the wall is the first craft distillery in Queens since Prohibition. And right now we're doing all our blending, proofing, and bottling here. We're not actually distilling yet because we're waiting for a still. But as soon as the still comes, we will actually be distilling and doing all our production here in Queens, which is incredibly exciting for us.
Awesome. And how? When did you guys open here?
So we opened Proof and Gauge in December of 2015. So we've been around for about 7 months.
Let's talk a little bit about the building that we're in. So it's called the Falchi Building.
Falchi Building. So it's a building that is owned by Jamestown Properties. They own Chelsea Market and a few other properties around the city.
Makes sense now.
So it's basically kind of the Queens version of Chelsea Market. And so we have a number of other tenants in the building, juice press, donut plant. There's a lot of small food stands. We, for example, have partnered with Don Tapas. They provide the food for the tasting room. It's a Spanish-style tapas cuisine. So there's lots of small little businesses on the ground floor. And then on the upper floors are offices. In the building, the TLC has their offices here. Of course,
and that's the Taxi and Livery Commission of New York City.
The TLC's here. And of course, Uber will be moving in soon, and Lyft is in the building as well. There's also a bank and some jewelers and stuff like that. There's Spaces, which is a co-working location. Those are kind of our neighbors in the building. The place is doing great. We're really excited. It's been really well received by our neighbors. It's still kind of an area in transition. It's mostly... people here come in for the happy hour, and then on the weekends we're not open yet because there's nobody here, but we're really excited to be part of the building and be part of the transition and growth that's happening in the area.
Yeah. So you're open Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Right. So we're open Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. We open at 4 and we close at 10. For the summer, we've started opening at noon on Fridays, and that's gone really well. So 4 to 10 most days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And Friday in the summer, we're opening at noon. And that's been so well received, I think we're going to keep that going.
Cool. And tell me about some of your cocktails. So I'm drinking the What's the Dill, which is a house-made dill shrub. So let's start with this one.
Sure. So the What's the Dill is a new cocktail for our summer menu. And I should say about all our cocktails, to the extent that we can possibly make the ingredients in-house, we do. So the What's the Dill is the Queen's Courage, and then a dill shrub that's made in-house. It's dry, it's refreshing, it's very much a summer drink. Some of the other stuff that we do, we have a cocktail called the BQE, and that uses Bruce Koss ginger beer, which is made in Brooklyn, Queen's Courage, which is made in Queens, so hence the BQE. Other ones that we're really excited to feature are the Idlewild, which is a kind of riff on the Aviation, which is a classic gin cocktail. But instead of using creme de violette, we use we make our own kind of creme with the blue cornflowers or bachelor's buttons.
Which I think we talked about
we
on
did.
The show.
Yeah. So it's bachelor button or blue cornflower and a little lemon and some cherry bitters. And it's kind of a riff on the Aviation. It's absolutely delicious, and it's beautiful because we garnish it with some of the flower petals. Another one that I'm really excited about is the local G&T. So we use Mike Haber, Haber's Tonic, which is made in Astoria. So Queen's Courage, a local tonic, and it's delicious.
And then you said most people come here for happy hour. So tell everybody about happy hour.
Yeah, so happy hour. So all our cocktails feature our gin, of course, and they're $10, which is a pretty good deal for a cocktail. But during our happy hour, they're $2 off, so they're $8. We also have all our New York beers, and those are $1 off. And those range anywhere from $11 down to $5. So with $1 off, that's a pretty good deal. And then again, we have our New York wines, and they're right around $10 a glass. And during happy hour, they're $2 off.
Awesome. And it's easy to get here. So I actually took the Express 7 from Manhattan and got off at Hunter's Point.
Hunter's Point.
It was actually a pretty short walk.
It's not a bad walk.
But the closest
subway train, if you take the 7 local, get off at the 33rd Street stop, and we're just 2 blocks away from there.
Well, thank you so much, and I look forward to continuing to see what you guys are doing.
Yeah, so we got lots of exciting things coming up that we're still working on, so we can't share with you, but follow us on all the internets, Instagram, Facebook, all that sort of stuff, to hear about all the exciting things that we're doing.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, thanks
Cheers.
So much. Cheers.
I'm with Ethan Long at Rockaway Brewing Company. So the last time we talked to you was at BCTC, which was almost a year ago, episode 130. So a lot has been happening with Rockaway. Let's start with your new location.
Absolutely. No, it's been a fun year and been really busy. We're very excited. We have a new location out in Rockaway, 415 Beach 72nd Street. It is our new satellite office. Currently open 7 days a week for the summer. We're serving beers out there, kind of introducing ourselves to the local neighborhood, and people are starting to show up on a regular basis, so it's been really exciting out there.
Awesome. What are your hours?
3 to 10, and weekends 12 to 10.
Okay.
So we're open 7 days a week, so you can't forget. It's like, which day are they closed? No, every day we're open, so we're there. So if you go to the beach, make sure you trek over from the 67th Street A-train stop. We're just a short jog closer to the bay.
And for those listeners that are not in New York City, Rockaway Beach is a big beach destination for people that live in New York City. It's one of the biggest beaches.
It's the only New York City's only local beach that we can call our own that's not outside of New York. So it's like, take the train there, short drive, you can ride your bike there as well.
So how's that been going at Rockaway? You said a lot of locals are starting to come back. And then obviously, I mean, that, like I just mentioned, it's a big beach destination. So I'm sure you're getting a lot of people that are coming from, you know, Manhattan or any of the five boroughs to the beach for the day.
Yeah, no, we've had great reception. It's been nice. It's picked up really fast, and people are experiencing us there. And so we're very excited to kind of invite them in. We're in the process of actually doing another outdoor spot on Beach 67th Street, which will be right off of the boardwalk. So that is more of a daytime, come off the beach, and then, hey, please come over to the brick and mortar spot on 72nd Street. So you can kind of get both conversations going on. So if you're just going to the beach for the day, you can absolutely grab a beer right by the beach and say hi, or come over to what will be one of our new brew spaces, hopefully in a year.
Awesome. So you guys are planning on getting a brew system for that space, and eventually it'll become a full-scale production brewery and tasting room.
Right. It's more of a convoluted conversation because there is the building in... ultimately, it's not big enough for the full brew house, so we're going to be doing some brewing production stuff there over the next year as we figure out the design, and then we're trying to acquire new space next to it to put fuller production. So it's kind of a two-fold conversation, but the ultimate goal is have a bigger production facility in Rockaway. Long Island City will still, truck along, hopefully full tilt, but since we're kind of our elbows are touching the walls.
You're at capacity at this point.
Yes. We'll take some of the pressure off here so that we can then have both spots going simultaneously and breathe a little easier.
Cool. So let's talk about some of the beers that you've had recently. So I am drinking the Brown But Not Stout, which was one of your newer beers.
Right.
So what was the inspiration for this beer?
We had a beginning of the summer, we redesigned our beach beer, as I do every year, and I'll make sure you leave with some cans of Da Beach. And so with our lineup of kind of lighter summer-inspired beers, I wanted to do something darker that was on the list, but yet still summer drinking. So this one's brown but not stout. So similar to a beer I did last year, this kind of dark in color but lighter in body. Once again, kind of alternating the yeast, so it's kind of a little bit of a Saison yeast in there mixed in. You probably won't detect it, but it's in the attempt to kind of give it a little bit lighter body, but with darker color.
Cool. Yeah, it's delicious. I mean, so it's, let me see, let me consult my watch. It's like 88 degrees out right now, and this is definitely quenchable,
right,
but has flavor as well.
So we did two kind of dark beers that were meant to be summer drinking. We canned up and have some yet released, it's called Blacktop Lager. So we did a black lager, which had a nice light body to it and a nice mouthfeel as a lager, dark in color. And then this was one of the precursors to it, but on a different bent of an ale that we produced.
So talk about, have you guys been doing events this summer as well?
We have. I can't say I know all of them, but...
one of the coolest things about the Long Island City Brewery is that you have the upstairs space as well. Mm-hmm. So you guys have pop-up food vendors as well as other kinds of events.
Right. Yeah, I think even just the other night we had comedy. We have stuff coming up this weekend. So we have a pretty full roster that I always tell people to check rockawaybrewco.com for our upcoming list. So pretty regularly we have different exciting people coming in here on Friday or Saturday. Sometimes middle of the week we'll do kind of throw something in for the mix.
Cool.
And in Rockaway, we're going to start doing more events out there too because it's kind of a nice open space. So we've had some barbecue stuff with Goodies, which is one of our neighbors. As we figure out, the different people who are out in Rockaway, we're going to have events that kind of curtail to the summer out there.
Absolutely. So talk about your comic. That's one of my favorite styles, and it's not something that you see very often.
I really love doing commons, and so we've done a few of them. We've had one lagering for the past month, so it's now coming out. We added a little extra crystal to it and gave it a little darker color just for the lineup, but body and taste should stay in line with some of the other commons we've done.
Cool. And are you using traditional hopping?
Fairly traditional, yes. It's
awesome. Well, thank you so much, and I wish you the best of luck. And I haven't been out to the Rockaway location yet, but I'm very excited. Chris loves the beach, and so we have to get out there.
We need to have both of you out. It's been pretty exciting out there, minus all the other work that I kind of putting my nose to the grindstone. But it's super exciting. I think just seeing it evolve and seeing what the potential is been really nice to play with. So.
Yeah, and especially because in New York City, this is our first actual beach brewery in New York City, so that's especially cool. Exactly. So awesome. Well, thank you so much, best of luck, and we look forward to checking back with you in a few months or something.
Yes, often as you want.
Okay. Cheers again.
Thank you.
We're here at Strong Rope Brewery with Jason Saylor.
Hello.
You may remember Jason from episode 152, aired on February 22nd, 2016. Jason's a very dear friend of ours. We go way back with the New York City Homebrewers Guild, and are so excited that Strong Rope is up and running. When did you officially open Strong Rope?
December 17th last year, so we're just over 7 months old now.
So in February, we were just a couple months in, and we talked a lot about your plans. How has your journey been thus far? Where are we at now?
So we're, you know, just over 7 months been open. It's been great. It's been lots of work, super busy, just figuring things out day to day. It's been an awesome journey, or it's still an awesome journey. And just, you know, playing around with New York ingredients, really getting to know the farmers and the maltsters, and you know. It's one thing I did a couple weeks ago was actually go visit a bunch of the farms, a bunch of the hop farmers, to put faces to names and see the operations and really get a, you know, try to build a, you know, some real relationships with the people that we're working with.
So what were your impressions from that trip?
They were good. It was really encouraging to see the people that we are working with are taking it so seriously, and have some awesome farms. And I think there's going to be a lot of growth in the next couple years as these farms expand, other farms come online. And it's just like, I think there's over 200 acres at this point in the state. And I think of hops. And you're going to see maybe a little bit more, but I think you're going to see that double probably in the next 2 to 3 years, like, or at least the acreage. It's going to explode. I mean, some of the people I was talking to, they're, you know, now at like 4 acres, and they're looking to put in like, you know, another 4, and maybe looking at purchasing 50 acres of land and, you know, expanding out from there. But it all just kind of depends on how the demand grows. And so kind of what we're trying to do here is say, hey, these are, you know, New York hops, New York malts, like, and we're making some really cool and interesting beer. And it's fun to see, like, okay, these look, it's really interesting to see the characteristics of, especially more so the hops and the malt, but like Cascade, Chinook, all these flavors aren't kind of traditional Cascade and Chinook. They're very much of New York and giving a lot different flavors. And I think it'll be interesting to see in the next couple of years as their fields come to maturity, how does that stay the same? Like, where are we in the process? I mean, we're still new, so we're figuring everything out. We've only gone through one season, so new season's coming up. Are we going to have the same flavor profiles? Are we going to have the same, you know, whatever? Like, is just the yield, is that going to be the same? So sounds like Centennials are going really well this year, which didn't sound like they did well last year. So hoping to get some of those in and see what those are like.
So these are agricultural crops, which means they're impacted by environment.
Yeah.
Greatly.
Soil, climate,
yep.
Everything.
So they can present themselves very differently on the East Coast than they do on the West Coast.
Right.
And from year to year. So they're directly impacted by amount of sunshine, like rainfall,
yeah.
You know, a lot of different factors. And I think it's cool as a brewer, I mean, and you're a smaller brewer.
Yeah,
so how big's your system?
We're only 2 barrels. So we're making 62 gallons at a time, basically.
And you're the perfect brewery to be able to take these hops in and, you know, kind of evaluate them and then decide how you want to brew it.
Right, so that's, I think, one of the good things of only making like 4 kegs at a time is we can experiment, and it's not the end all if we, I mean, it's, don't want to lose a batter or anything, but we can experiment. We can say, okay, this is great, and then be like, oh, well, you know what, this isn't great for maybe by itself, but it'd be good, you know, blended with something. And then, you know, we're being able to figure out the flavors of what we're doing. Like, are all the Cascades the same? Or, you know, and then we can kind of like, okay, Cascades were great last year, and the Chinook, you know, from this particular hop farm was awesome. Like, let's maybe kind of blend those and then do that and see if that stays the same next year.
And a great place for the consumer here at Strong Oak to experience this is through your Fallen Squirrel project.
Yeah, so the Fallen Squirrel is all single malt, single hops, and we do them by project number. So there's, you know, at this point we've done 10, and we're playing with, you know, different malt and hop combinations, single malt, single hop combinations for each of these beers. And it's always, we'll never repeat those. It'll always be changing. It'll always be moving forward.
You say that, but if we're gonna the crops change year to year. Would you intend to repeat year or harvest versus the hop variety
in order to focus
or bring attention to that these changes in varietals would taste?
I hadn't thought about that. Good question.
Maybe.
Well, I guess we'll see. I mean, the one thing also is that a lot of new hops are coming online. You know, first year, we didn't get much, or some of them we didn't get. So next year we'll get in, and people are planting new varieties all the time. So we're going to continue to play and do it. I do think it would be good to utilize them in some way. So we might not do the exact replica of like Fallen Squirrel for next year, you know, which was the mystery hop from Whipple Brothers and I believe it was New York Craft's Light Munich malt. So we might not do the exact poundage or you know, amounts, but we could kind of play around so that we are doing something with that hop and see if that flavor that we got last year is similar. Because I think that's important. I think we need to, you know, make sure that there is consistency from year to year. And these guys are really, the people we, I don't know if it was just lucky that we got working with these farms, but most of these guys are really into it and doing a great job and taking care and wanting to learn, and because there's no knowledge base in New York. They're really, you know, besides like two or three, most of the farms are 5 and under years old, that is. Like, everyone's still young, and they're trying to learn either through Cornell or UVM.
Or our feedback.
Yeah, and, you know, that's one thing I want to make sure. Like, everyone, like, because a lot of people have been weary about using hops from New York, and I'm like, well, and it can be tough if you're a bigger brewery to kind of take that kind of jump to that amount of hops for a beer that might not come. So I understand that, but so we can act as a if they do decide to do that, just give them feedback. What do you like? What don't you like? You know, is the packaging good? You know, did they dry it properly? How are the pellets? You know, all of that stuff. So,
so for anyone using, you know, their local hops and grain, what would be your advice?
My advice for
Tricky, how do you approach this? I mean, you're getting hops and malt that you've never had any experience with, right?
Yeah, I mean, so we, you know, I had. As over the years, as I was brewing things, I started doing recipes with hops I knew that I could get. They weren't going to be the same hops, but they were at least the thing, so that, you know, then I could build recipes around that. And then once we brought them in, it was just a matter of playing with it. I contact the farmers directly. Like, just go, and if you can, go check out their facilities. Go see them. Go learn what they're doing. Learn what they have, and do a pilot batch. You know, most of the breweries, bigger breweries, have pilot batch, like, or home brewers. I know some of them are starting to also try to do some stuff with homebrew shops. Most of the places are central Western New York, Finger Lakes region, that type of stuff. There's some in the Hudson Valley as well, and a couple on Long Island. So they're pretty much everywhere. So you can find them.
Cool. Yeah. So let's talk about what you have coming down the pipeline.
We're actually going to have a couple of our first saisons coming out, so that should be fun.
We Appropriate for the summer.
Yeah. And then we have another one of our stouts, and we're going to be, we have right now our Lazy Stargazer, which is our first seasonal. That's online. It's a wheat wine brewed with honey and then fermented with strawberries and rhubarb, 9.3%. That is our first seasonal, and that's not going to be around much longer.
Delicious.
It is delicious. Yeah. How much? How much strawberries and how much honey did you use this? And where did you get either of them?
So the honey was actually from my mom. She lives in Western New York and has a guy that she allows to bring hives onto her land, and he gives honey exchange for a free place to house the bees. So we get a little of that wildflower honey from upstate. And then we also got the strawberries and rhubarb from Long Island. We used 11 pounds of the honey, 32 pounds of strawberries, and about 6 pounds of rhubarb.
In a two-barrel batch.
In a two-barrel batch, yes. So, yeah, it was a good amount.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Thanks.
So delicious.
So we're looking to get some more fruits while the fruits are starting to pop up. So we're waiting on some peaches, if we can get some cherries soon. And then when the blackberries come out, we'll be doing a blackberry and lavender blonde or light saison. Haven't quite figured it out. So we'll play around with that. We'll keep the lavender subdued, so don't worry, it's not going to be a potpourri type thing.
I love lavender, though.
Yes.
I mean, not everyone does.
I did one before when I was homebrewing, and it was really nice, but it was a strong lavender character. I didn't think it was. I thought it matched well with the blackberries, but it was definitely, it wasn't everyone's favorite. Just the
polarizing.
Lavender, polarizing. Yeah, Lazy Stargazer, not so much polarizing. It tastes like jam.
Yeah, but delicious.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. We're so excited to be here.
Thanks. Thanks for coming down. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is fun.
Thanks for staying strong. Rope.
Ferment about it.
Hey, this is Rachel Jacobs, and we'll be back with more Beer Are They Now right after this short break and a word from our sponsor.
Americans throw away 58 billion disposable cups every year. A lot of those cups will still be around long after you're dead. Kind of dark, I know, but I'm Greg from Kapow, and we decided to do something about it. We created the only glass travel mug that's 100% U.S. made. You can check it out alongside our complete line of everyday reusables at kapow.com, CUPPOW.com.
I'm here with Zach, Pete, and Tony of KCBC, Kings County Brewers Collective, in their new space. So last time we talked to you guys, it was episode 134, which was almost 10 months ago. We were in the space, except you hadn't even started demo, so lots has happened since then. Who wants to start? Well, you have the brewery in, right? You guys have brewed a couple batches of beer.
We're making beer. Yeah, no, the brewery production side of things in terms of the construction is 98% complete.
97.
Thank you, Pete. It's probably true. You're right. I forgot about
point
the...
Pete just found something that was broken, so...
I sort of fixed it.
Putting those hangers under our new stainless piping that we have to connect the HLT to the mash tun. We're 97.3. Could you put them in? So,
but yeah, the brew house is up and running. We have four fermenters full of beer and two in the cooler. So six beers already under our belt.
Talk about those beers.
So yeah, well, the first two are recipes that Pete brewed.
The first one is sort of a trial batch. Gotta learn our new system. See where the ingredients scale, especially the hops and whatnot. So we went with a simple smash beer, and it's
That's the one I'm drinking now, right?
Yep. It's Golden Promise malt, and shooting for 5.4 ABV. Yeah, kind of pale ale range, but we hopped it to basically make a session IPA. It's aggressively hopped. We shot low with IBUs, though. We went for 30 IBUs and calculated 175% utilization over a homebrew recipe, and that was probably too low.
We're getting a lot of acidic, you know, bitterness, just because it's a hot beast.
Yeah, and the hop that we use is Idaho 7, otherwise known as 007, the golden hop. And I had heard from other brewers that that has a pretty aggressive bitterness as well, so wouldn't normally use that as a bittering hop, but it worked out pretty good shooting at 30 IBUs, and that's the first beer.
It's got a lot of orange, kind of like orangey, like apricot almost flavors and aromas.
Big pine.
Yeah. And pine, yeah. There's like a smooth, very piney.
It's really nice. It works really well in a session IPA, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, kept a lot malt based, like Golden Promise is kind of like a, you know, cheater malt. It's just enough kind of light sweetness, but still dry. So yeah, that one came out really well.
Four different yeast strains we're using right now, and our goal is to try to keep that kind of variety going. You know, which is pretty cool. I mean, it's sort of, you know, hoping that, you know, the idea of the collective and it's all of our distinct brewing styles, you know, yeast just adds one more characteristic that we can really differentiate these beers and really make them stand out and not get that, you know, what a lot of breweries would call a house character,
right.
You know,
yep.
So.
And we're also talking with other breweries about doing a little yeast exchange program, so expanding more than four strains, yeah. So we'll trade off and float one for a while, send it somewhere else, get it back, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we already have five. We stole some Chico, borrowed, you know.
And bugs.
And some bugs for our kettle sour, which is coming up soon. It's a basic Berliner Weiss recipe that I've brewed a bunch on a homebrew scale and scaled it up. So we soured that beer in the kettle. Total of 30 barrels, got down to about 3.2 pH, so pretty sour, with lacto in the kettle. And then fermented that with the, you know, Greenpoint Beer Works borrowed, you know, yeast pitch that, you know, I drove across town because our four yeasts were already all busy, so we needed a fifth. And I think it's kind of a, again, the beer community in New York is great in that way because, you know, we know the people who are brewing, and I think we're all pretty eager to help each other out when we can.
And what else?
Pete's got the second brew too.
So saison, it's a very simple summer beer. It's supposed to be light and easy crushable. It's Pilsner malt, flaked wheat, white wheat, saison DuPont yeast strain. Just very light. It's Magnum for bittering and little, like 1 pound of Styrian and Whirlpool, and lemon zest. A case of lemons, 10 minutes towards the end of the boil.
You guys zested yourself.
120 lemons that we zested ourselves.
What?
Not by hand though. Sorry, we had a machine.
Found the best machine ever. $17 on Amazon.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you know, nothing against, you know, the people who are, you know, truly handcrafting these beers, I guess. But, you know, we're happy to use efficient
solutions. It's handcrafting, even if you use a machine.
Hey,
trust me.
That machine by hand.
Yeah, and we're not boiling our water with fire, you know, we're using steam, so, you know. And then up next, we have our IPA, probably the next beer on the market.
Yeah, that's a beer. That's our tiles being cut in the front there.
We can pause.
So our the IPA that we have going is called Dangerous Precedent. No reference to the political landscape, not intentionally anyway, but maybe relevant, perhaps, unintentionally. The beer there is about 6.9%, pretty aggressively hopped with Cascade, kind of the whole classic grapefruit and, you know, old school, and then Mosaic and Azaka to give it a little bit...
good. It's you know.
It'll be fine. To give it, sorry, I'm just tile cutting. It's got a really big kind of fruity aroma. We're using Vermont ale yeast on that, so and it's got a lot of two row and again some flaked wheat, which I think will, you know, with a little bit more than a pound per barrel dry hopping, it'll give it that kind of hazy new school northeast style IPA look without going to full, like, you know, orange slushy, you know, because, you know, nothing against an orange slushy, but, like, you know, I'm still, you know, easing my way into that. I'd like to still kind of be able to see beer, not just, you know, muck, personally, you know.
I agree.
But yeah, that's about to be, we're soft crashing that now. That's going to be dry hopped, I think, early next week. So, looking forward to having that one out on tap soon as well. And then I think our next beer after that is going to be our Pilsner, which Tony brewed.
Yeah, we've got a kind of classic Pils that's just Pils malt and Willamette. Another simple, delicate, nice hoppy 4.8% Pilsner. So we'll see that next. And then what do we have? Beer number six.
Five is the Kettle Sour, which I was talking about earlier. It's called Beach Zombie. We're going to be adding, it's fermenting now. It's almost done with primary. And then we're going to be adding a lot of strawberry and guava to that beer in the fermenter to really kind of heighten the sort of tropical summer drinking experience. But it's a recipe I've done before, and I'm really excited to have a lot of that.
Right?
It did, yeah. People seem to be digging that, and again, the way this summer has been, how hot this summer in New York has been, I think it'll be a nice fit in a couple weeks here.
Yep.
And then our sixth beer, which we just brewed, I think a couple days ago, is Pete's as well.
That's a Bug Bite Summer Ale. Should be coming in around 4.8. It's kind of malt forward, loosely based on All Day IPA. So it's got some two rows, some Golden Promise, some Victory, and on Care Munich. And then it's going to have an interesting hop bill to include Magnum for bittering, and then Cascade, Saaz, and Styrian Goldings in the finish, in the whirlpool, and in the dry hop. And that's
like a Euro trash for you.
Yeah,
you
know, sort of
a little like American Euro, we call it Euro trash summer ale.
Yep. And then we got
other stuff coming up. I mean, you can see the trend. The trend right now for us is easy drinking summer beers.
Yeah. Appropriate for this 92 degree weather.
Yeah, you know, we came into our first brews, and you know, we had a lot of other things we wanted to brew and thought were going to be part of our initial lineup, and then when we realized that we were going to be launching late July, early August, we were like, this should all be really drinkable, you know, sessionable beers. Yeah. And we're pretty stoked about the lineup. It's,
yeah.
it's fun. Everything's tasting good. It's going to be perfect to finish off the summer. And then we'll move into the fall with some, start mixing it up a little bit.
Cool. And so the tasting room, obviously from what you guys could hear in the background, there is a tile saw. They're finishing up the very last of the wall tiling.
Yeah, we have some really cool, you know, Italian porcelain tile that's kind of finishing off this whole frontage, dividing the tap room and the brewing area. But there's a lot of glass as well. You know, we're kind of doing a lot of sort of tile and glass, playing around with sort of geometric shapes, keeping it pretty clean and simple, I think, overall. You know, with a slightly, I would call it modern kind of, you know, edge to it. But we've had some really, these guys, Max and Greg, are designers who've been working on this and building it all and grouting and cutting and, you know, kind of doing everything, have come up with some really, kind of a really cool aesthetic that we're really excited about. I mean, you know, being able to sit behind the bar and see the fermenters, you know, kind of literally like almost in arm's reach, I think it'll be kind of, you know, make for that kind of, you know, immersive, brewery drinking experience that we're excited about.
You have 12 taps.
12 taps. We're going to be doing, you know, draft out of the tap room, 32-ounce crawlers to go. The crawler is a big, giant 32-ounce can. So everything we have on tap will have cans to take home with you, which is pretty cool. Yeah. You know, tap room is going to be, plenty of seating for people, nice big open air. The frontage will have, nice big glass windows that all open up. So on days not like today, right, we can have it open in fresh air. And then, we've got a nice HVAC system that should keep it nice and cool on days like today. I'd probably have that on right now. Yeah. So,
we're sweating our asses off in the brewery.
Yeah, I'm literally dripping on myself right now. It's kind of disgusting. So
you guys hear the fermenters bubbling in the background and the tile saw grinding in the front,
You know, the tap room space, from day one, the main priority of this space was to be able to have an awesome tap room. I mean, beer production's number one, but it's a little easier to, work around, those logistics depending on the space. But we were really looking for a space where we're going to have this great neighborhood tap room space, and it's going to be fun. It's a cool spot. So,
just off the L. Jefferson stop, so literally right around the, it's like a block and a half from the train.
Yeah, so easy to get to, don't need to drive. There's no parking in this neighborhood anyway, so, we love public transportation. What else?
I'm sure there'll be garages cropping.
Oh, yeah, no, we welcome all modes of vehicular or non-transport. We're not going to, discriminate. What else was I going to say? Oh, one of the other cool things, which I think was Pete's original idea, was our local talent tap.
Yeah, we do have roughly a barrel-sized pilot system. I think it nets probably closer to 25 gallons, and we are going to be using that for collaborative brews with anyone and everyone, interesting people in the neighborhood and throughout the city, and talented homebrewers and musicians, chefs, tile cutters, and collaborate with them on beers, brew them on that system, keep them all in-house, and put them on that tap that's dedicated to those brews. And those proceeds, a portion of them will go to a charity that they'll choose that will work to, that we'll work that out together. And it's pretty exciting. We're looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. Best
thank
of
you.
Luck.
Awesome.
Finishing all the work.
About yes. It.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awali, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.